Hey, look at this. It's the 13th day of May. Welcome to Flames Talk. My name is Ryan Pinder. It's brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery. You know, a lot of people do work around town. How many proudly do it right here in Calgary? Wild Rose Brewery proudly brewing their beer right here in Calgary. If you don't believe me, go taste their works of art at the Curry Barracks tap room and restaurant, or just head out to liquor store and bar around the province. Check out your favorite Wild Rose beers. There he is, the host of hours 1, 2, and 3, and post-game and pre-game and intermissions and all that stuff. Pat Steinberg, also at Flames Talk. It's very confusing, Patrick. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Flames Talks, Ryan Pinder?
Well, I'm hour zero. This is really the warm-up. It's just to make sure people know where the fast-forward button is so they can get to your hard-hitting hours 1, 2, and 3. Now, I hear you have a time obligation at 9:12, so we've got 4 good minutes. Is that right? I hear you're doing a Finnish language magazine. You're doing a deep dive on the lack of Finns on this year's Flames roster. Is that right?
I just wanted to make sure that you knew that was just a tongue-in-cheek joke.
Yeah, it's good. I like it. We're getting a lot of those these days. Maybe it's that new clock where it's like, oh, yeah, well, we could keep you for a half hour. No, you know, I'd need to be out by. How you been?
I'm good, man. I'm looking forward to tonight. Like, I was thinking about this yesterday, and, like, this is the first time for the vast majority of this core that the Calgary Flames have an opportunity to win a playoff round. Like, Matthew Tkachuk, Andrew Mangiapane, Noah Hanifin, Elias Lindholm, Rasmus Anderson. These guys have never been in a position. Michael Stone. These guys have never been in a position to win a playoff round. They've never been in a spot to actually advance beyond round one. They've played in games where they can be eliminated, but they've never had the opportunity to clamp down and eliminate somebody else. So I'm really curious to see how this group reacts. Like, Johnny's done it once when they beat Vancouver in 2015, but, you know, with Monahan not playing, really, Backlund was on that team, but the vast majority of that team, they're not here anymore. So this is a really interesting game for me. And like, how do these guys react? How do these guys, what type of effort do they bring to the table? And do they have the killer instinct to make sure that it gets done on their first try and there's no game 7 on Sunday? I honestly do not know what to expect. I feel kind of similar about this game as I felt after 40 minutes on Wednesday, where I turned to Maddie and I was like they're down 1-0. I'm like, well, here we go. And he's like, what do you expect? And Maddie goes, I have no idea what to expect. And obviously the third period ended up being a really big one for the Flames. But I'm curious about what they bring to the table tonight in Dallas.
Yeah, we've talked ourselves into overtime, and then a minute later said, yeah, this could be the game. The floodgates finally open for them offensively, and maybe they get a puck bounce off, you know, something other than a stick and into the net. Who knows? Dallas hasn't, for whatever reason, whether coincidence or there is correlation, they haven't been able to clamp down as hard in that building in front of their fans. It's been higher event hockey in games 3 and 4 than all 3 games in Calgary. And the Flames certainly, with a franchise record 25 wins away from home, comfortable on the road. I think guessing outcomes is always a bit of a fool's errand, but I would expect 7-11. I would expect we should see, at least to start, some Mangiapane, Backlund, Coleman, and that's been a nice development. You particularly have been talking about that line for months. Ever since Toffoli got here, we haven't really seen that line, and it was back and certainly massively impactful in Game 5.
Well, you go take a look, because they played together a lot, those three did. I want to say in kind of November, December, January, that was kind of the stretch where those guys got their longest run together. And if you go to Evolving Hockey and just take a look at their combos table, I mean, we've talked a lot about, you know, there's the Matthews line with Marner and Bunting. There's obviously the Lindholm line with Gaudreau and Tkachuk.
Dallas's top line.
Robertson, Pavelski, and Hintz. But if you take a look at some of the underlying metrics for lines that have played 300 minutes or more together this year, possession, expected goals, goals for percentage, all that type of stuff, the line with Backlund, Coleman, and Mangiapane together has been one of the best in the NHL, like better metrics at times than the Lindholm line. So it was interesting that they didn't put that back together at any point really since they acquired Toffoli. And you know, I kind of understand it because I would imagine that Daryl knew just as well as anybody else that that line was really good together, and he puts a lot of stock in stuff like that. And I wonder if he, instead of putting it back together, decided to keep that in his back pocket if at some point he felt he needed it come postseason time. And you know, it took them, I think the first time they put it together was in game four in Dallas, or maybe late in game three when they started to have a little bit more success. But they put it back together at times in game four, and then it was a line that really jump-started things in period number three of game five. So, yeah, it's if they go 11-7 again, which I'm with you, I anticipate they do. I think that it's been a good setup for them. I it's funny. I remember listening to Rick Bonus ahead of Game Five at the Saddledome, and just listening. I believe Matt DeFranks of the Dallas Morning News asked him if he had thought about going 11-7 himself, and he basically said, "No, we haven't thought about that." And then went on this interesting kind of soliloquy about how difficult it is to coach against 11-7. And I kind of read between the lines, and it felt like, and I might be completely wrong, but it sure did feel like Rick Bonus was kind of saying that, look, the Flames have got enough talent and they've got the type of forwards that going with 11-7 is effective, and it makes it that much more difficult for me to coach against. Whereas we don't have that type of talent. We don't have those type of players that if you go 11-7, you can really start to take over a game. And it's worked. I mean, Michael Stone has done his job, and he's kind of been the first guy we've talked about when you do the 11-7. But take a look at the byproduct of certain guys who have been able to get more ice time, and more importantly, the byproduct of being able to play different guys with one another. And you've been able to see, okay, well, you can put that together, Backlund, Coleman, and Mangiapane, and you can also put Backlund out there with Tkachuk and Gaudreau for a shift, or have Lindholm go out with Toffoli for a shift. It's been really interesting bench management for Daryl since he went 11-7, and that's one of his strengths, like riding a bench and you know, the feel of who's going and who's not going. And so I would imagine they do the same thing again in game six tonight, because why not? It's been a huge reason why they've been able to swing the series and win back-to-back games for the first time.
And you know what? I don't think it's easy. Like to Bonus's point, we would see it all the time if it was really easy and it worked well. And boy, that's a better way to do things. But for whatever reason, with this setup, it has. And I think you're right. Like there's been so much movement with Sutter and the forward groups 2-3 especially. But you know, 1-4, I think we've had really solid. You know, we know often who plays together, but no one is unfamiliar with the other parts they're being put with. And to be fair, you got a lot of versatile guys that are good at both ends of the rink. I think it's a unique scenario where for the Dallas Stars as an opponent, this is the best way Daryl can run things. And if you're not going to go, guess what happens if you're a forward for 11-7? You can watch 9 guys play a bunch or 10, right? I mean, there's that extra motivation. And frankly, they don't miss Brett Ritchie as much as Michael Stone can help out at even strength, power play, and penalty kill.
Well, that's a big thing with Ritchie, is that he doesn't play special teams. And as effective as he can be in his role as a fourth line forward, you know, you're right. You miss a guy that doesn't play special teams a little bit less. Whereas, you know, a guy like Trevor Lewis, he's an important penalty killer, and he's one of their main PK forwards. And you know, even though the power play units have changed a little bit, and we haven't seen Milan Lucic on PP2 as much, he's still a guy that I don't think at any point is coming out just for the things that he can bring physically to this series. And so the guy that ends up being the odd man out is Ritchie, because he doesn't play that special teams time. And Michael Stone does have the ability. He's a very, very simple defenseman, so you can easily put him out for penalty killing shifts. And with his shot and with that ability to get it to the net, which he's shown since, this season, he's maybe shown the best ability he's ever shown throughout his entire NHL career of getting pucks towards the net. He's stepped in on Wednesday or Monday night, rather, and put 8 shots on net when they went 11-7. And so, you know, you can play him comfortably 10 to 12 minutes and feel like he's going to be effective for you as well. And you know, so Edmonton goes 11-7 last night, but that's because they don't have Darnell Nurse. But, you know, Woodcroft's done that a few times this year. And again, Edmonton has the type of forward personnel that going 11-7, you like that. Like the opportunity to really roll McDavid and Draisaitl, and even now when you're talking about Kane and the way Nugent Hopkins is playing, you can see why a team like Edmonton goes 11-7, and Jay Woodcroft has done that at different times this year, even going back to the regular season. And the team that has done it the most over the last few years, again, you're talking about a team that you've got that type of forward talent, and that's the Tampa Bay Lightning. And even when Rick Bowness was there as an assistant coach in Tampa, they did that a lot. And John Cooper has been known in playoff games and regular season games to roll 11-7, and a couple of different reasons there. You've got Kucherov, you've got Point, you've got Stamkos, you've got guys that can absolutely benefit from a little bit more ice time. And as we've talked about many times, they've got so much depth on the back end, and they're always sitting one guy who's a pretty good defenseman, it seems like, when they're going with 6. So it's pretty specific situations, but when you're talking about Gaudreau and Lindholm and Tkachuk specifically, and you can give them a little bit more time, and then all of a sudden Backlund and Mangiapane and Coleman start to play really well together, and now you found something there, you can see why 11-7 works for a team like Calgary. Whereas Dallas, I don't know if they got players like that. Ben and Sagan are not the guys they were very clearly. And I don't know, like, Jason Robertson has been next to invisible in this series, even scoring that goal in Game 5. And Pavelski's been great, but, you know, he's an older guy, and you need to manage his minutes. And Hintz isn't that type of dynamic player that you throw more minutes at him than 11-7 works. So it's a very specific setup you need, and the Flames have got it.
Okay, I got some quick hitters for you. So I'll take my audio, Patrick. I have a buzzer and a bell. Who needs a goal more badly? Like who is on the bigger cooler or is in more desperate need of finding the back of the net? Is it Tyler Toffoli or Kale Yarncroke?
How much time do I have before I start? Do we want 30 seconds? Do we want 22 seconds? What do we want?
I can find a bed if you can take all the time you want. I just want to hammer you with a buzzer, no matter what you say. So go.
Oh, okay. I'll say Toffoli. And not because.
Sorry, continue.
Tyler Toffoli is the answer. Next.
No, you can explain. It's a talking point.
I just think Toffoli is. He's frustrated, and you know Daryl's talked a lot about how he needs to just keep on getting those chances and they'll come. And especially the last couple of games, it really feels like not only is he getting chances, but he's working for those chances. He's been around it. He's been a big reason why those chances have developed. Whereas, and I also think Toffoli is the type of guy that he needs that offense to, that's part of his game. And I think there's more frustration that sets in when he's not scoring as opposed to a guy like Yarncroke, where that's not as essential to him being effective. And I think Yarncroke has been one of their more effective guys. If you take a look at the 15 periods we've played so far, I think Yarncroke's been fairly effective in every single game in his role. And, you know, he's had games where he's been more offensively around it, but he wins good puck battles down low in his own end. And he's smart in the way that he can affect the play going the other way. And he sets the table for the line that's coming out after him. So I haven't, and it's not like I think Toffoli's been bad. I just, you know, he was a guy that was a little bit more conspicuous in his absence in the first 3 games, whereas Yarncroke, I felt, has been pretty consistent with what he brings. And his offense, like they didn't go and acquire him as much for his offense as they did Toffoli. They went out and got Toffoli to get another offensive goal-scoring threat.
Yeah, and for the Yarncroke story, his first game as a Calgary Flame was against the Buffalo Sabres, where Dustin Tokarski put save of the year candidate against him with a diving, sprawling, improbable save, and it's been nothing but incredibly horrid puck luck since then for him. Also have a nice bet on the line, so if he wants to score one tonight, that would help old Pin Dog here. Yeah,
And he's,
come on, I mean, Cali, my boy Cali, let's go.
The boy is not, like, historically, he's not the world's best finisher either, right?
No, so, but he's allowed to finish one as a Flame, right?
Let's go. And tonight's the night. You know, Pinder, Daddy Pinder needs some some Friday night money.
Let's go. And, okay, another one for you. How would you, are you giving thumbs up or thumbs down to Matthew Tkachuk's series thus far?
I would give, if I had to give one, I would go towards thumbs down so far. I think he's had some moments. Obviously, game one, he was great, one of the best players on the ice. I thought he had a good bounce back in game four, and that line had a good bounce back in game four.
Yep.
And Johnny was dominant, and I think Elias has been their best player throughout the entire series and has been their most consistent player, but I did not like Matthew in game two, three, or five. So if you're going just based on purely time that I've liked and time that I haven't liked, I'd have to go thumbs down. And they need him to be. They need him to be one of their best players. Yeah. And that's why I thought game four was really encouraging, because in a back against the wall, absolutely have to have it situation, he stepped up and was much, much better. But, you know, the middle two games of the first four, far too concerned about stuff that didn't make him as effective. And, you know, somebody put it after game two on our text line. Somebody put it and said, yeah, guys, I agree. The Flames need 100-point Matthew Tkachuk. They don't need super pest Matthew Tkachuk. And as fun as it is to see Matthew into that role, and as much as he seems to relish living in it, they still need him to be the guy that was an offensive driver, a dominant offensive driver, and a guy that is one of the most unique players in the NHL. That's the guy that they need, and I don't think they get him anywhere near as effective when he's getting involved in stuff that he doesn't necessarily need to be involved in or is sitting in the penalty box. So I would go thumbs down overall with some good signs, and if they could advance out of this round, I think there's plenty of potential for Matthew to be better and better as the postseason goes along.
That's a correct answer, and I think this is a learning process. He hasn't played a lot of playoff hockey. We saw him leave the tournament in the bubble. 18-19 was over before it started. It felt like the whole group was reeling, looking at the lights, wondering what hit them. And I think it is a fine balance. If you're Matthew Tkachuk, you definitely don't want to avoid going to the net after the whistle, and you don't want to stay away from scrums, but you also want to make sure you're as interested in creating offensively as you are getting under John Klingberg's skin. Like, the moment for me that I was like, okay, he's still figuring this out, was game two, where he went offside to engage John Klingberg off the opening faceoff. Like, that tells me where your head's at and where your priorities are. He was not interested in, you know, gathering speed through the neutral zone to join a potential rush so much as, we got to get this guy right now. Did you hear what he said after game one about my boy Rasmus?
Yep.
Like, and this is part of the learning process. I don't think it means he's not a good playoff player or that he's going to be bad tonight. I think it's quite the opposite. I think there's probably a lot to be learned about when and how, and that if you're going to play the same team for 2 weeks, you don't have to settle the score shift one of the next game if you don't like what someone did.
Well, and I think part of it is that it's not a bad thing at all, but part of it is the guy wants to succeed
right
at this time of year more than anything else. Like he is, I truly believe all of that has been a byproduct of just how much he wants to impact the game and how much he wants his team to win and how much he wants to be in the teeth of what makes the postseason different than the regular season. But you're right, learning process is a good way of putting it. And the more that he can embrace the fact that he can get under team skins and be an absolute pest and do it by being as good offensively as he can be, as skilled offensively as he can be, and drawing penalties like one of the best players in the NHL since he joined the league in 2016, like, to me, that's how you get under a team's skin. And yes, you still want to be engaged and stick up for teammates, and when the time is right, absolutely be there. Like, for instance, on that game one, that was very spur of the moment and
not scripted and all that type of stuff.
Whereas the rest of it, you're right, it seemed a little bit more forced and scripted.
Okay, last one for you in terms of the quick hitters. Is snub what we saw with the Hart voting yesterday and Johnny Gaudreau? Is that the best word we can find to describe Johnny not being a finalist for the Hart Trophy? Snub.
And he's not he also is not a finalist for the Ted Lindsay Award either.
I saw that. Yeah, that's a little more context. But again, snub or not snub?
I would say snub infers like this is some sort of miscarriage of justice, and I would say not a snub as much as with my zero votes for any NHL award.
Right.
If I did, he would have been on my top three for the Hart,
yeah,
without question. I think Kaprizov had a great argument. Yossi's a Ted Lindsay Award winner. Award nominee and not a Hart Trophy nominee or finalist. And so, you know, when you're talking about Yossi and Draisaitl and Johnny and Makar, and like, there were a number of guys that had really, really good cases to be in the conversation and don't end up making it. It's not a snub, but to me, he should have been there because we're talking about things that players and forwards in this league haven't done specifically at even strength in decades. So he would have been to me. He would have been, should have been for me. But with as many good players, because the problem is I can't sit here and tell you that any one of the three guys don't belong there.
Right.
And so this is not Jose Theodore, Jerome McGinley. Instead, it's three really good deserving players and a few other really good deserving players that end up on the outside. So I would say no snub, but slightly disappointing because I thought he deserved to be in that conversation. And I'm really curious when award voting comes out. Is he four? Is he five? That'll be really interesting.
I'm with you. I think that's dead on. And more to your point of not a snub, it's just a tough year for him to have this kind of year. I mean, when Mark Giordano won the Norris, it was like, okay, there's no real competition. He's going to win this thing. And then some people were like, no, it's Calgary. People don't even know we have a team in the league. And he was a landslide. He got like, what, every first place vote or something? The opposite is true here, where it just happened to be a year where the best goalie in the league and the gap between him and the second best goalie in the league was bigger than the years Hasek won the Hart. Like, maybe the best goaltending season of the last 20 years. Now, as people that follow the Calgary Flames, like most people listening are, you probably didn't see a lot of Igor Shesterkin in the two games you saw. He was awful. So hard to believe, but true that did occur. Clearly, Connor McDavid is the greatest offensive player in the game and had the greatest offensive season this year in the NHL. And then you have Austin Matthews putting a rather historic scoring season together in this era of hockey and was a very responsible player on the defensive side of the puck relative to his goal scoring peers. It's just a tough year to go out and have the kind of year Johnny did, because I think a lot of years this is a Hart finalist, if not a Hart winning type performance. And if you're trying to sell the Johnny thing, it is absolutely even strength production. Connor McDavid may finish his career and never have a season with as many even strength points as Johnny Gaudreau did this year. He hasn't yet had what Johnny put up this year. The last player to exceed Johnny's even strength point total going backwards, it was mid-90s. It was, I believe, Jagr, Yzerman, and Gretzky were the three. Like, it's the insane, insane company. That's the selling point for Johnny, but it's just happened to be a year where there's also three other really good arguments that get finalist nominees. And to your point, we didn't even mention Yossi. We didn't mention Makar. We didn't, you know, Steven Stamkos' best offensive year of his career, Kirill Kaprizov. Man, tough year to be a finalist based on a forward getting offense, because there was a bunch of them.
Well, I just wish that they, could they just change the nomenclature or the language of the Hart Trophy already? Because it's so dumb at this point, because it gets, and I don't know if this played into it or not, but people get so hung up, and understandably so, people get so hung up on the definition of most valuable player or most important player to his team, and then it starts getting into, it's like, okay, well, you know, well, if they didn't have Johnny, they'd still have Matthew Tkachuk, and look at how good his year was, and Elias Lindholm, so maybe we'll penalize Johnny for being on a really good line, whereas if the Oilers didn't have McDavid, they probably wouldn't have made the play. Like, it gets it gets to the point where, okay, is this the most valuable player, or is this the best player in the NHL this season, or are we overthinking it because of the definition? And it's become slightly frustrating because I don't know, because we don't have votes, and I'm not trying to lobby for any of us hacks to get votes, because I don't think we should. We're not journalists. The journalists should vote.
Incorrect. We actually are lobbying to get votes. So continue.
Okay. Please give us votes. But I don't know what to expect when hard voting comes out anymore. And it's weird because Selke voting has turned into they don't really pay attention. Like, and by they, I just mean the way it seems to have gone. Selke voting. Well, the Selke trophy, should it go to Patrice Bergeron, or should it go to like the best lockdown forward in the NHL, like the definition suggests? Like,
why do you have to have a good offensive season to win the Selke? Isn't that exactly what the award's not for? Like,
exactly.
It's backwards.
But it's turned into, well, the best defensive center who also puts up points.
Yes,
and
exactly.
So but that's not in the definition. The definition is the forward in the NHL who excels the most at the defensive aspect of the game. So shouldn't Manny Malhotra have won 7 Selkies? I don't know. It's weird how weird how it's turned out and how it's turned how the awards have evolved over the years.
Yeah, and here's a final quick hitter for you. Would Ryan miss an opportunity to take a shot at the Edmonton Oilers? Would Pinder swing and miss at a chance to crack something the Oilers did?
No.
So the year Leon Draisaitl wins the Hart, that was 1920, scores like crazy. When he's on the ice, games are within 2 goals and it's even strength. The Oilers are basically sea level or -1 or -2. How are we defining value here?
Yeah. Well, remember,
he's a great player, but it's like we know what end of the rink his skills lie at.
Well, remember the 9-5 game, and
yes.
I do 3 stars at the Dome, so I text them into this group chat, and somebody in the group chat, I won't name who, but
oh, please, you know, DM after the show,
text me privately, goes, just so you know, because I don't pay a ton of attention to plus minus in games. But somebody texts me and goes, just so you know, 29 for Edmonton is -4. I'm like, oh, you know what? Let's switch Draisaitl for Backlund instead. Because you're like, this guy scored 3 and was -4. And look, I know that doesn't happen. That was the first time something like that happened since, I believe, 1980. But it just is an extreme example of what you're talking about.
What do you expect tonight?
I do not know, but I guess I'm going to go with my gut, because logically I don't know because of how strange this series has been. But gut tells me, just being at the airport yesterday and listening to Blake Coleman specifically, it feels like this group has figured it out against Dallas. I don't know what it's going to mean when they play LA Edmonton. But it feels like they figured out Dallas, and it feels like they're confident in what they can do and how it translates against the Stars. And I loved Coleman's comment about, you know, this is a time of year where you can't let up and you have to like be okay with kicking teams when they're down. And Dallas has had 2 frustrating losses. They got the doors blown off in Game 4. Mm-hmm. Then in Game 5, they played their system to a T and were in the spot they wanted to be after 40, and then they let it go, and Calgary ran them over. So you wonder if Dallas is in that spot where they're questioning a little bit if the way that they've played can ultimately give them success. And that's where I think guys like Coleman and some of the other veterans who have been in spots like this recently can really help and push the team to doing just that and going out and bullying Dallas and shake their hand afterwards. So that's what my gut says happened tonight. But logically and my brain, I honestly don't know what to expect tonight, because we are talking about so many guys who have never been in a position to win a series before. And we are talking about a team that, you know, has had a lot of trouble with what Dallas brings. And if Dallas brings it again and they do it with all that urgency and desperation behind them, you know, they can easily be as tough and out as they were in game two and game three.
I also agree. Cali Yarncroke in double OT. Thank you, Pat. We will,
Big money, we will be tuned in.
6:30 warm up. And yeah, I guess calls till 5 a.m.
We'll take them until they stop coming.
That's the worst policy we've ever had. Thank you, Pat.
Bye, buddy.
That's Flames Talk. Our first guest, Pat Steinberg. He's a host of Hour 1, 2, and 3. This is Hour 0 Flames Talk. That's what we figured. You know, this is the early morning. We'll warm you up and, you know, you let the car run for 20 minutes in the winter. Then once it's warm, then you start driving it. That's Pat when things get going. Hour 1. The sked today looks like yay. It'll be Jeff Merrick of the Jeff Merrick Show, JM Show, coming up 23 minutes. And then beyond that, we go Best Boomer at noon, Big Show 1, Flames Talk Hours 1, 2, and 3, 4, 5, and 6. And then it's a 6:30 Flames warm-up puck drop, 7:30 from American Airlines Center and or Arena. Don't you be zooming in around Rick Bowness. You keep your eyes on the net, on the playing surface. Focus. Game 6, elimination game should be fun. More Flames Talk on the other side. We'll hear from the head coach. Pat mentioned words from Blake Coleman that seemed to inspire him or at least build confidence in his belief for the Calgary Flames. We'll let you hear those. It's all coming up. Flames Talk brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery. They're proudly brewing their beer right here in Calgary. Check them out at their restaurant and tap room in the Curry Barracks, or you can go to find your favorite Wild Rose beers at bars and liquor stores around the province. Sportsnet 960 The Fan. My goodness, what's going on here? I'm getting pumped up. Here we go. Flames Talk. Hour 0. I'm Pinder. That right there is a half-drank six-pack of Velvet Fox. Just kidding. Not yet, guys. Red Lot will open at 4:30. Does that move the needle for you, Patty?
4:30.
I don't know what happened and when, but all of a sudden there was like 5,000 people when they started panning to that thing in Game 5.
Yeah.
What?
Now we're talking. Now, if the Oilers
are humans spawning in the Red Lot,
I think
are they creating? Where are these people coming from? What's going on?
Coming out the woodwork.
4:30 there. 6:30 warm up with Steinberg. 7:30 puck drop from Big D. It is indeed Game 6. A chance to move it around too. We'll see if the Flames can take care of business. Wild Rose Brewery, proudly brewing the beer here in Calgary. They're the title sponsor of Flames Talk. If you stop by the tap room, ease your nerves over lunch hour, cool pint, enjoy the grub at the restaurant there in the Curry Barracks. Or maybe you're watching at home, you got a little watch party, bring the neighbors over, stop by your favorite liquor store to pick up your favorite Wild Rose beers. Okay. I was not expecting this. I'm a little hot and bothered now, Patrick.
Yeah.
Why don't we said Big D earlier. Let's not talk about Dallas, but instead the head coach of the Calgary Flames. There was a short media availability, and I didn't realize it until Pat said it, at the airport yesterday as the Flames are traveling down to Dallas after their Game 5 victory. Hey, coach, lots to talk about, including Game 6 that lies ahead, killer instinct, Johnny Gaudreau's season, and lack of a Hart finalist. He's going to get lots of votes, just not enough to crack the top three. All that addressed by Sutter and more.
You mentioned last night that the fourth one is always the hardest to get in a series.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, one's, you know, bottom line is at the end of the day, we have a lot of guys that haven't won a fourth game. So that's the next step in the process. See if we're capable of doing that.
So what do you tell those guys who haven't?
Been telling them for a year and a half. It's not like tomorrow you're gonna tell them something different.
Backlund said that a couple of guys spoke up in the second intermission. Just how much of a difference can that leadership make during a game?
Well, you make the playoffs because you have some. Half the teams do. So it's not like there's some brilliant moment that falls out of the sky and that's gonna make the difference in a game.
Joe, can you just talk about Johnny Gaudreau? He's taken some pretty good licks, and
Johnny's been really good in the playoffs. For me, he's taken that step 100%. He did it during the you can see it during the season. He's done it during the playoffs. Proud of Johnny.
Is he a Hart finalist in your heart?
Well, him and Marky are our guys, so I don't know what that means or who, if that's a, who votes on that, I have no idea.
You guys that have won the Cup before and you brought them in for that, their experience, and getting over that fourth game hump or whatever, do you feel like having them around is really going to make a difference?
I think the recency in fact does. I think guys that, you know, there's always guys, older guys that won it, and it's hard to go that far again, and they have to challenge themselves to see if they can, because it's a huge price they pay. And then there's probably younger guys that win it, and they don't even remember what happened, you know, like when they're kids. But I think the recency effect has a lot to do with it. I think that Blake Coleman and Trevor Lewis and Ty going last year to the finals, too, I think that has a bigger impact than anything.
Where do you see it most with Blake? He's won it, obviously, most recently. Where do you see that?
Because it's hard during the game, for lack of a better word, to get the shit kicked out of you during the game. And you got to be willing to do it to somebody else. And there's players that do and players that don't. And when you ask, well, how come that guy didn't play or how come he's struggling or something like that, that's why.
Did we see that from Blake in the third period last night?
Seen it the whole game. I mean, if you only see it in the third period, well, you probably. I mean, it's not like he's a great competitor. It's not like he's a star. So he's got to be a great competitor every shift.
You've mentioned sort of not being able to pass it, you know, like pass it into the net, basically. The Blake sort of drove to the net hard. Is that an example of sort of what?
It's where all the goals come from. Screens, tips, rebounds. It's basically a challenge for the goalie is what you have to make it.
Given the way that line came together in the third period, is it likely to be together again or not?
I really didn't give it much thought. We just played nine forwards, and then once we got the penalties, then Trevor played and did a good job for us. So if you play 11 forwards, well, you're not really going in lines. You're basically, what you're doing is anybody who's not putting the hammer down gets to watch. So it doesn't matter who plays with who.
There's been a lot of shuffling there, and as Rick Bowness alluded to and Pat talked about, pretty difficult to line match when you don't know what the lines are, how they could perform. And Stone's been good. Penalty kill, power play, some small even strength minutes, lighten the load from some of the other right shot D. Don't mind it at all. Here's some news and notes surrounding some other games tonight. There are three contests tonight. No, they're not going to play a fifth game between Colorado and Nashville, Patrick. I know you've been lobbying the league. They've gotten back to us. Nope, not going to happen. We are still going to keep that series over. So okay. We don't care if they're healthy or not. They're not going to play it.
All right.
We will have at 5 o'clock Rangers-Penguins. A lot of news from this series. Tristan Jarry and Ricard Raquel on the ice for morning skate, as was Brian Dumoulin. Dumoulin will not play. Jarry will not play. Ricard Raquel, game time decision. You know who is not on the ice for the Pittsburgh Penguins of morning skate? Sidney Crosby.
Oof.
And he has been ruled out for tonight's contest. So the Penguins, who led the series 3-1, now look at no Crosby, potentially no Raquel, no Jarry, no Dumoulin, and a game 7 looming if they can't take care of business tonight on Broadway. Yikes. In the Washington game, it's Florida in D.C. That's a 5:30 start. That's on Sportsnet 360. The main network has Rangers-Penguins. No Tom Wilson. That's a big loss for the Caps. He is very much, if you tried to explain the difference between regular hockey and playoff hockey, Tom Wilson is playoff hockey. It's physical, hard-nosed, and you still need to score. He does all those things. And it will be Ilya Samsonov in net for the Capitals as well. Those are your league notes there. Ted Lindsay, finalist, McDavid, Matthews, and Yossi, who was not a finalist for the Hart. No Johnny Gaudreau for either the Ted Lindsay or the Hart Trophy. Quick thought from Blake Coleman on Killer Instinct. We'll end on that note on Flames Talk today. Here's the... Well, he's got two rings from the last 2 years in the Stanley Cup playoffs. He knows a thing or two about putting teams out.
You know, this is a... A time of year where you can't take your foot off the gas at all and can't let up or show any weakness. You got to kick guys when they're down, and that's it's going to be a great atmosphere. Obviously their backs are against the wall, so you got to match that intensity and that willingness to pay the price to win.
Jeff Merrick Show around the corner. Best of Boomer at noon. Big Show at 1. Flames Talk at 4. Flames Warm Up at 6:30. And Puck Drop from Dallas, 7:30. If you're looking to get at it, the Red Lot's open at 4:30 today. This has been Flames Talk for Wild Rose Brewery. We'll be rounding up some electric avs and velvet fogs today if you see me out and about. Check them out in their tap room and restaurant in the Curry Barracks, or find your favorite Wild Rose beer at bars and liquor stores around the province. They're proudly brewing it right here in Calgary. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.